Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Yudal and Amud Bet. The Gemara is still discussing the point as to whether this machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in our Mishnah resulted in Beit Shammai actually acting upon their psak halacha, or was this a theoretical machloket because in the end we paskin like Beit Hillel. So the Gemara is bringing down different proofs to try to show us whether there was actually a practice of Beit Shammai according to their psak in the Mishnah, or whether it was just a theoretical psak. Tashma, Dama Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. We quoted this earlier with regards to the Mishnah. One of the sections of the Mishnah came to exclude Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Heich halacha zu ravachat b'Yisrael. This halacha, how are we going to take care of it amongst Klal Yisrael? Nasek divrei Beit Shammai. If we practice like Beit Shammai, havlad mamzer ledivrei Beit Hillel. That according to Beit Hillel, we product of following Beit Shammai turns out to be a mamzer. Because if you allow the Tzara Tayerva to get married to the Yabam, then he's marrying someone who is a Chiyuv Karet, according to Beit Hillel, and the product of that marriage would be a Mamzer. Nasek Divrei Beit Hillel, if we follow the practice of Beit Hillel, Havlai Pagum LeDivrei Beit Shammai. According to Beit Shammai, the product of that marriage is Pagum. Now, according to Beit Shammai, viewing Beit Hillel's position, Beit Hillel allows the Tzarat Erva to go free without anything, without Chalitza, without Yibum. According to Beit Shammai, they need a minimum of Chalitza. If she marries a third party, then she's in violation of the law of Lo Tiyeh Eshet Hameita Chutza Lishzar. So she's in violation of a law. So as far as a Mamzer is concerned, they certainly do not produce a Mamzer because it's only a Chiyuv Lav. But they do produce as an offspring that is Pagum, which Rashi over here explains. The Avagav Dibnei Chayvei Lavim Ksherim Lekal, even though they're totally kasher to marry another Israel, chalalim heim linyan kuhuna. They are no good with regards to the kuhuna. This is a problem of kuhuna. So therefore, there is a degradation of the status of this child because of the marriage. Bo v'nitkan lehen letzarot, shihu cholzot v'lo mityabnot. Says, let's make a standard policy, which will cover both bases. We'll have every Tzarat Erva perform Chalitza. According to Beit Shammai, it's necessary, and therefore it releases her. According to Beit Hillel, it is unnecessary, but it doesn't harm, it doesn't do anything. Plus, if they do Chalitza, instead of Yibum, they won't produce Mamzerim, because they're not following the position of Beit Shammai that allows them to form Yibum. So this would be the best solution to the scenario. Lo ispiku de gmorat ha-davar chenitrafa ha-sha. They weren't able to put together the takana, or to deal with it until things broke up or it didn't work out. So I'm what are you going to do with the original tzarot that we're not subject to this takana? So now the Gemara interjects and says, listen, if they really acted, then what are we going to do about the original tzarot? It's one thing to institute this takana prospectively. What are you going to do with all the tzarot that came beforehand? Now, if they were acting on the psak of Beit Shammai, then there's something to talk about. What are we going to do with all these old tzarot? Eliamart loasu, if you say Beit Shammai never acted on their psak, my manaseh, what's the big deal over here? All we have, we definitely do not have mamzerim if they didn't act upon Beit Shammai. At worst, we have women that got married to an Isur Lav according to Beit Shammai. And they can go ahead and perform chalitza. It won't affect their marriage at all. So I'm Rav Nachum Yitzchak lo nitzrucha lo tzara tzma. No, the reason is because of the tzara herself, not the children they're worried about, but the tzara herself. Umanaseh hochi kamar. What does it mean? What are we going to do? Hanach tzarot de Beit Hillel le Beit Shammai. These tzarot, according to Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, hechin avid lehu. What are we going to do to them? Of course, again, there are going to be no tzarot of Beit Shammai because they didn't practice like Beit Shammai. They're only practicing like Beit Hillel. But in Beit Hillel's practice, you do have a problem according to Beit Shammai, which is, what are you going to ask them to do now? L'chaltzu, have them perform chalitza now. Mim'ase agavrayu, they are currently in a marriage. They're married to someone, a third party, because they were released from Yibum, because they were tzarat erva. They went ahead and they married someone. Now you're going to ask them to perform chalitza while they're married to this individual? That's going to make them disgusting. This person is going to feel like, oh my gosh, I was married to this woman who wasn't proper. It's going to make it that the whole situation is unpleasant or sour the marriage in a sense. Okay, too bad. We got to put this takana in place. They'll have to deal with it. We can say no. There's a requirement that the Torah, in general, the principles of the Torah are the nicest way to go, the most pleasant path that we take. So therefore, we're not going to institute something that causes people to be sour on their marriages or problems between a husband and wife. I don't know if it's Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel's question that caused the problem in their ability to institute it, or the quorum fell apart, and then Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel afterwards asked on this issue, what were they going to do anyway? But again, we don't have a proof from here, because we thought maybe this was a proof that they actually acted upon it, but we came up with a way to explain this whole scenario, even if they did not act upon the Psak of Beit Shammai. Tashma. Next one is Damer Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon was a Talmud of Beit Shammai. We know that from the Gemara in the beginning of Brachot, with the Vishach Bechov Kumecha, that Rabbi Tarfon got off his donkey and lay down and endangered himself, and they, the Chachamim there said that you should have died. You were deserving of Mita because you followed Beit Shammai's position when it wasn't necessary. We only paskin like Beit Hillel. Tamar Rabbi Tarfon, Te'avni matai tavo tzarat habat yadi ve'eseena. Says, I'm looking forward for this opportunity where there will be a tzarat habat, which is tzarat erva, and I will be able to perform Yibam with her. I mean, I will be able to execute on the psak of Beit Shammai. That really sounds like they were practicing like Beit Shammai, and he was waiting for that opportunity. Where it says, Ema v'asiyena. Amend it to read, v'asiyena means, I will marry her off. Meaning not that I will marry her, but I will allow her to marry a third party, which is like the psak of Beit Hillel. Where it says, v'hata avni kamar. Doesn't it say that I was desirous, I was looking forward to it? Why is he looking forward to marrying her off to a third party? Looking forward sounds like he himself is going to act on it. Where it says, l'afuke mid Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. To come to exclude the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who just stated before that every tzarat erva would perform chalitza. And here it's saying, no, there is no chalitza involved. He's telling me that I will act in accordance with the position of Beit Hillel to the exclusion of the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. This girl will marry off to a third party without any chalitza, simply marrying her off. So he was looking forward to enforcing that psak of Beit Hillel, even though he was from Beit Shammai. So again, no proof from here whether they actually acted or not on the position of Beit Shammai. Tashma, Maseh bibito shel Rabban Gamliel shaita nisua la'aba achiv. She was married to her uncle. Rabbi Gamliel's daughter is married to her uncle Abba. Umeit b'lo banim. And Rabbi Gamliel's brother passes away without children. V'abam Rabbi Gamliel et sarata. And Rabbi Gamliel performed Yibum with the co-wife of his daughter. Disbra. Wait a minute. Let's take a step back. Umar says, okay, that's interesting because that sounds like Beit Shammai. But does this make any sense? Rabban Gamliel, mi talmidei de Beit Shammai hu? Is Rabbi Gamliel really from the Talmidim of Rabbi Beit Shammai? He's from Talmidei Beit Hillel. He's a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. The Nasiim are descendants of Hillel. He's not a descendant of Beit Shammai. He follows the position of Beit Hillel. So the incident here can't be exactly what we're suggesting, because even if it was, he would have passed him like Beit Hillel, not like Beit Shammai. Ela shiny bitosh Rabban Gamliel, da'ilonit tavai. Because she was found to be unable to have children. Since she was unable to have children, she was disqualified from performing Yibum. She was disqualified as a wife. And therefore, it was no longer Tzarat Erva. The reason he married the co-wives is because his daughter was really knocked out of the picture. Since his daughter was out of the picture, there's only the co-wives that were left. If only the co-wives are left, he can't perform. Where it says, V'amiktani Seifa. Doesn't say in the Seifa, Cheru Morim Bitosh Rabban Gamliel Ailoni Taita. That the daughter of Rabban Gamliel was an Ilonit. She was unable to bear children. So maybe that, if that's the case, then the Tanakhama is saying something else. Because the Acherim are the ones who say she was an Ilonit. Means that the Tanakhama believes there was something else that was going on over here. So Gemara says, one possibility is Hikirba, lo Hikirba, Hikir Benayu. The machloka between the Tanakhama and the Acherim is whether the brother, Achiv, Shel Rabban Gamliel, Abba knew that she was an Ilonit when he married her. Was there a Mekach Ta'ut here, or was there not a Mekach Ta'ut here, and does it matter? We actually saw this earlier in the Masechta about whether a Hikir Bar or not Hikir Bar makes a difference. What the Gemara is suggesting over here, that this Machloket between the Tanakhama and the Acherim revolves around whether you have to know ahead of time or not know ahead of time. If you don't know ahead of time, then it's a Mekach Ta'ut. The original marriage dissolves, and therefore there's going to be no Yibum. The only question is, if it was known when the mother married her, it was known that she was an Ilonit, does that also affect things? Is she still within the world of Ibum? Is that a good marriage? Or is she dropped out and she does not protect the Tzarot Ha'erva? And that'll be the difference between the Tanakamo and the Acherim. Now Rashi drops a girsa from the Gemara that says, Ela Tanakama Dafka Delo Hikirba. The Tanakama believes it only works when she does not recognize, they didn't know ahead of time that she was an Alenit and it was a Mekach Ta'ut. But if they knew and he married her anyway, then Tzarata Asura. According to the Acherim, even if he knew about it, she's Muteret, because it's not a problem. The reason that Rashi takes that girsa out, which would explain to you the difference between their opinions, is because it's not relevant in this case. In this case, it says in that Mishnah, Bito Shirugamlil Ailonit Haita. Not Nitzait Ailonit, but Haita Ailonit. She was an Ailonit. It was known. So here it's irrelevant. In this Mishnah, the difference between the Tanakama and the Acherim is irrelevant because they did know that she was an Ailonit. They knew that she was an Ilonit beforehand because it wasn't that Nimtzeit, they found out all of a sudden that she was an Ilonit, but it was Haita, she was an Ilonit, and it was known beforehand. That's why he says the Girsa here is not whether with the Tanakama says this and the Acherim say that, because in our case it's just not relevant. So therefore you don't need to explain the Mishnah and say, oh, the Tanakama holds this, the Acherim hold this. The Acherim make it clear what their position is. It says Haita, Ilonit. She was already Ilonit prior to her marriage. So that's one possibility. What's the difference between them? Vibai Dema, Kanas, Lusov, Girish, Inigo Benayu. Their machloka is also something we saw before in the Masechta, which is the Erva. Does it cause a problem for the co-wife? Is that only if they are still married at the time of the death of the individual who is dropping them to Yibum? Or is it even if they were at some point during the marriage, they were together? So that would be the machlokas here. The Acherim believe that if they were married simultaneously at any point during the marriage, then it's problematic. And the Tzarat Erva would not be available for Yibum. So in this case, if the brother of Rabban Gamliel married his other wife, the co-wife, and then only then divorced his niece, then according to the Acherim, that would not allow perform Yibum with the co-wives because the Tzarat Erva existed at some point during their marriage. So that's why they added in a different region. That's why they said Ilonit. That she was an Ilonit. And that's why it was not a problem with Tzarat Erva. Nothing because she wasn't available at the time that he passed away, but because she was an Ilonit. On the other hand, the Tanakama believes as long as they were not married to him at the point, the filah that you boom, at the point that they dropped Yibum, there's no problem with Tzarat Erva. So he had already divorced his niece by the time he passed away, and therefore the co-wives were available for Yibum, and she did not cause a problem. So the Tanakama will say the reason is because there were no Tzarat Erva at that time. The Acherim say there is still a problem with Tzarat Erva because they were once married simultaneously. The co-wives were married together. And the reason that the co-wife led to marry Rabban Gamliel is because his daughter was an Ilonit. Ivai Dema, Yesh Tnai Bebinya, Ika Minayu. The difference between the Tanakama and the Acherim is whether you're allowed to make a condition in Biyah. For instance, they want to consummate the marriage, but there is a condition in the consummation. Whatever that residual condition is, we won't find any mumim. Anything that you want, that's a condition. The question is, can that work? So the Tanakama says, yes, you can have a reservation in the Biyah, the consummation of the marriage. You can perform Biyah, and then if you find the problem and the Tanai is not kept, then it falls apart, and the Biyah is a Biyah Znut. The Acherim say that doesn't work. The Biyah says, in Adam Osib Biyato Bilat Znut. Person never acts in that manner. That means that if he had Biyah, he overrode the Tanai. He automatically assumed that the Tanai did not matter, and the marriage is consummated. Well, if the marriage is consummated, then what happened here? Why isn't this Tzarat Erva? That's what the Acherim say. She was an Ilonit, and that's what dismantled the marriage, not because the Biyah had a Tanai in it. Right? These are just ways to distinguish between the Acherim and the Tanakama, but all of these answers have the same thing embedded in them, which is the reason Rabbi Gamliel married the co-wives is because his daughter was out of the picture. Since his daughter is out of the picture, this is not really Tzarat Ha'erva. Meitiv Rav Misharishya. Maseh v'Rabbi Akiva. Shalikeit etrog be'echad b'shvat. Nahag bo bet isurin. Echad k'divrei beit shamai. Echad k'divrei beit hilal. This is machloket. We've seen this before in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. We discussed it there with regards to Shemitah and Shanat HaMaaser for fruits. The Shnat HaMaaser and Shemitah for fruits is determined by Tu Bishvat. That happens to be a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says that the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot is Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and Beit Hillel says it is Tu B'Shvat. Rabbi Akiva picked an etrog already on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. So according to Beit Shammai, it's already the next year. According to Beit Hillel, it is the previous year. So he had a safek year, and therefore he was maaser like the 2 years. It was between the second and the third year. So for Beit Shammai, it was already the third year because he did it on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. According to Beit Hillel, it was still the second year for maasrot. The second year has maaser sheni. The third year has maaser ani. So what he ended up doing was redeeming the fruits onto money, giving those fruits to aniyim, and then taking that money up to Yerushalayim to eat. So that's what he was nohag like both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Shmamina asu. Over here, it sounds like they're practicing like Beit Shammai. Why would Rabbi Akiva worry about the position of Beit Shammai unless they were actually practicing like Beit Shammai in places? And he had a safek now, so he practiced like both of them. The question you could ask is, how do you paskin like both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? There should be mutually exclusive positions. The Gemara in Erevin and in Rosh Hashanah discusses that. Over here, the Gemara goes down a different path and gets rid of the problem, which is Rabbi Akiva gamrei istapakli. He didn't have a safek between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Rather, he forgot what was the position of Beit Hillel. Did Beit Hillel think it was Rosh Chodesh Shvat, or did Beit Hillel think it was Tu B'Shvat? He forgot which one was the position of Beit Hillel. Therefore, his only safek was within the position of Beit Hillel. Wasn't a safek about Beit Shammai whatsoever. So that's a machloket. The question you're asking is the problem that we have. Really, this year it wasn't as much of a problem. Just this year they picked all the etrogim before Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, whether it was Batar Lekita or Batar Chanata, it was before the Shemitah year. Therefore, the etrogim were not Shemitah. Next year, they will pick the etrogim after Rosh Hashanah. So that if it's Batar Lekita, it will not have Shemitah. But if it's Batar Chanata, it will have Shemitah. And therefore, all the etrogim next year will be Safek Shemitah because it's a machloket. With regards to etrog, whether we go for Shemitah, Batar Lekita, or Batar Chanata, it's a machloket in the Tanaim, it's also a machloket in the way that we paskan alocha for etrog. So Rabbi Kiva here is clearly following Batar Lekita, but going Batar Lekita, he still has a safek as to when the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot was. Meitiv Marzucha. Maseh b'yalda kalatoshal shamay hazakein, upichetet amaziva v'sikech agabe yemita, yishvil katan. Shammai had a grandson during Sukkot. He was a baby. His kalato, his daughter-in-law, had a baby during Sukkot. The baby, according to Beit Hillel, was not chayav in Sukkah because a tinok, a tzirich li'imo, any baby that needs its mother is patur min a Sukkah. Shammai disagrees and says that even a katan requires Sukkah. So he acted upon his position, and therefore the baby was in a room. They peeled back a part of the roof above the baby's crib, and they put schach on top of the baby, so that the baby would be inside of a sukkah. So here you see, Shvaminasu, they acted upon the position. Shammai is acting upon his psak halacha. Now, this is more interesting because here it's really Shammai and Hillel. And Shammai and Hillel only argue two or three times in Shas. And I don't know if it's really subject to these same rules of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Shammai and Hillel might be different. The Gemara does not answer that, but it seems to me that that could have been an easy answer over here. Here we're talking about Shammai and Hillel, not Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. But the Gemara gives a different answer, which is, Atam Arwe Omer, Tafushe Avir Kaavit. The person from the outside would not be able to think that he was actually practicing or making it into a sukkah. Again, this is what we've seen in yesterday's daf, that when it's not Muchacha Milta, when it's not obvious that the reason that you're doing this is because of the halacha, there could be another reason. So there's a practical reason they could have done it, and there's a halachic reason. Since it's not clear which one it is, it's not obvious that they're doing the halacha like Beit Shammai. The same thing over here, though. It's not obvious they're doing the halacha like Shammai, because they wanted to open up an air, give a little more air to the house, so they peel back and put schach on. I don't know. Seems pretty obvious to me. They're not peeling away their roof and putting on schach, but the Gemara here at least entertains the possibility that you wouldn't be so obvious that they're making it into a sukkah, and therefore, even if they're passing like the Shammai, it wasn't really against the position of Beit Hillel. Meitiv Marzucha. Maseh. Bishoket Yehu, Shaita B'Yerushalayim. There was this case with a shoket, which is like a water capture mechanism inside of a stone. It's a stone that has a hole in it or has a depression in it in which the water was flowing down into. There was a pipe bringing the waters from the mountain or from a mayan down into this area. But The problem was that the depression or the area where the water was captured in the shoket was not big enough to capture 40 sa'ah. So this is stationary water that requires 40 sa'ah to be a kosher mikveh, but it did not contain 40 sa'ah in it. But it had a hole in it that allowed it to connect to a kosher mikveh that did have 40 sa'ah in it. They used to take all the tarot in Yerushalayim, they should put them in the mikveh, but into the shoket, the place where there wasn't a 40 sa'ah, but it was connected to a mikveh that had 40 sa'ah in it. Shalku Beit Shammai bir chivua. Beit Shammai went ahead and expanded the hole that connected between this water receptacle and the mikveh that contained 40 sa'ah. Beit Shammai omrim, ad shetipached beruba. The only time that a mikveh is kasher, when it connects to another water body to get to the 40 sa'ah, is if the divider between them is knocked down in the majority. So they require a very large connection between the two mikvot in order for it to be considered a joint mikveh. Beit Hillel disagrees, but it's not. Eruv mikvot kishfoferet anod. The connection between mikvot is like a hole which is like a piping. Be'ovya u'bichalala kishtei etzba'ot. Its width and its volume require the ability to move two fingers, stick two fingers in there, v'chozrot limkoman, and you can twist them around. So it's not just get two fingers in there, you gotta put two fingers in there and be able to spin them around. That's the amount of space we need them to have, what we call nishika, to join the two mikvaot together, which is what you'll see today in the mikvaot, the piping between them that has a cap on it, when they open it up to join the bore, which contains the 40 sa of rainwater, and the mikveh, that's a pipe, but this size. They don't knock down the roof of the wall. They have a pipe like the size of Beit Hillel. So the question is, here in Yerushalayim, the shoket was kosher to Beit Hillel, because they had a hole to a mikveh that was that size, and it was kosher. Yet Beit Shammai went ahead and ordered the people to expand the hole to follow the position of Beit Shammai. So what do you see? Shema mina asu. Sounds like Beit Shammai is acting on their opinion, despite the fact that Beit Hillel disagrees here. It says, Na'atam arei omer lafushe mayahu dekovid. Again, there could be a practical reason that they're opening or expanding the hole. They weren't expanding the hole because they needed to connect it to the mikveh. They were expanding the hole because they wanted more water there. They wanted more water flow in there. And because of that, they opened up the hole. So, again, you could argue as an outsider that it's not clear they're doing this for halachic reasons. They could be doing it for practical reasons. And therefore, Beit Shammai, in enforcing their opinion, wasn't necessarily undermining Beit Hillel's position. Tashma, Damar Rabbi Elazar bar Tzedok, she'ayti lomed Torah yitzel Rabbi Yochanan Achorani. I was learning by my Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan Achorani, ra'iti she'ya ochel pat chariva b'melach v'shnei batzoret. Was a year of drought. There wasn't much to eat. Rabbi Yochanan Achorani really had nothing. He was poor. And he was eating dried out or stale bread with salt. Basically, he had nothing to eat. So, bati v'odati adabo. I went and told my father, this is what he was eating. Amrei halich lo zeitim. Take to him olives. Go take him something to eat. You know, make sure that he has what to eat. Very nice story, meaning that here the son took note that the Rebbe didn't have what to eat. He went to his father. His father said right away, take him food. He's got to have proper food. So then, volachti lo, I brought the food to him. Ra'utan shein lachin. He saw that they were moist, that there was liquid on them. Amrei enani chel zeitim. Says, I don't eat olives. He didn't tell him the real answer why he didn't want to do it, but he says, I don't eat olives. So then, bati odati adabo. I went back and told my father that he said, I don't eat olives. Amalei leich velmurlo. Go and tell him, chavit nikuvaita. It was a barrel that had a hole in it. Elish satmua shmarim. But the sediment plugged the hole. Now, what's this all about? Vitznan. Here's the Mishnah. I can explain it to you, but it'd just be easier to read the Mishnah, and then we'll go back. Chavit shel zeitim migulgalim. You have a barrel full of olives that are fat, juicy, that were being pickled, and actually leaching liquid. They're leaching some of the liquid inside of them. They're ready to be pressed. That liquid that comes out of them, what is the status of that liquid? Beit Shammai omrim, ein tzricha lenakev. You do not have to puncture a hole in the barrel, because the liquid that comes out of there is what's called mohel. Mohel is not really shemen, it's not oil. It's a liquid that's leaching from the olive, that doesn't have the guts or the fat of the oil in it, but it has some of that liquid. It's a meperot. So Beit Shammai says it's meperot, and therefore it's not machshir the kabel tuma. Since it's not machshir the kabel tuma, you don't have to do anything here. You can leave it the way it is, and it's not machshir the kabel tuma. Beit Hillel omrim tzricha lenakev. Beit Hillel says you do have to put it on because the mohel is machshir like shemen. Shemen is one of the seven liquids that is machshir the kabel tumah, the prime items to be mekabel tumah. What exactly this mohel is, Tosafot discusses three different types of liquids that can leach out of the olives, and whether or which one we are speaking about over here that is considered to be a problematic liquid according to Beit Hillel. And then we're afraid that an Am Haaretz might touch the barrel, make it tamay, and then the olives were tamay, and that would have been a problem for Rabbi Yochanan and Achornani. I'll discuss that in 1 minute. So they say you have to put a nekif, you have to put a hole in it to show that you really don't want the liquid that's leaching from these olives. By putting a hole in it, the liquid will drain out. The liquid drains out, you're megaledat that you don't want the liquid. You can only be makshir the kabel tumah with the liquid if you want that liquid. If you either want the liquid to wash the item or you want the liquid, period. Since here you show that you don't want the liquid by punching a hole in the bottom of the barrel so it leaks out, then we don't worry about it. But they agree, umodim, shinikva, if you actually punched a hole in the barrel, v'sadmu ha-shmarim, and the sediment settles over the hole, shehitel ra. Even Beit Hillel agrees in that case, that that's not a problem, because you demonstrated by punching the hole in there that you didn't want the liquid. If in the end, practically, the liquid didn't get out, we don't worry about it because you showed that you were not interested in the liquid. So that's what he says over here. Even though it was wet, it was moist, which indicated there was liquid on the olives, what he's saying back to Rabbi Yochanan and Achorani is, don't worry about it because I didn't want the liquids. Since I didn't want the liquids, it's okay. It was not mikabo tuma. Vafel pisho tamid shamai haya. Even though he was a student of Shammai, kol ma'asav lo asah l'kedivrei Beit Hillel. He only acted in accordance with Beit Hillel. Most of the Rishonim think that this statement was made about Rabbi Yochanan Achorani, but from Tosafot it makes it sound like this statement is actually made about Rabbi Tzadok, because he claims that Rabbi Tzadok was from the Talmidim of Beit Shammai, although that seems a little strange because we find in other places in the Mishnah that Rabbi Tzadok was associated or close to Beit Rabban Gamliel, who were clearly descendants of Beit Hillel. So therefore, he did punch a hole. It was that the Shmarim plugged the hole in it, plugged up the hole, and that's why they were moist. So don't think that I was practicing like Beit Shammai, and therefore I just left everything in there, and therefore, according to Beit Hillel, would be problematic. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan Achorani didn't want to touch it. He says, no, I'm practicing like Beit Hillel. The reason they're moist is because the sediment settled over the hole, and it didn't drain. So that was what he sent him. Now, Tosafot asks an interesting question, which he says, that Va'afakav the Rabbi Tzadok was a Kohen. Rabbi Tzadok is a Kohen. And therefore for him, O big day prushim midras l'ochlei truma. So meaning that Rabbi Tzadok kept a much higher level of Tahara than Rabbi Yochanan Achorani. So what was Rabbi Yochanan Achorani worried about over here? So mekom mekom haya chushesh lefish Rabbi Tzadok mitalmidei bat shemai haba. He was worried about not that whether Rabbi Tzadok kept Tahrat HaKodesh or Tahrat HaTruma. What he was worried about is that Rabbi Tzadok was a Talmud of Beit Shammai. And since he was a Talmud of Beit Shammai, maybe he practiced like Beit Shammai, which Rabbi Yochanan ben Achorani didn't hold like. He held like Beit Hillel. So he sends back to him, no, I practiced like Beit Hillel. The reason it was moist is because the hole got plugged. E amar bishlamasu. If you say that they acted, Beit Shammai acted on their opinion, hainu revute. That's the chiddush over here. And Rabbi Tzadok says, listen, I am from Beit Shammai, but I still practice like Beit Hillel. That's a chiddush. Eli amar lo asu. If nobody in Beit Shammai ever acted like Beit Shammai, then my rebutei. What was the chiddush that Rabbi Tzadok was acting like Beit Hillel? Everybody acted like Beit Hillel. Nobody practiced like Beit Shammai. So what's the chiddush over here? So that the Gemara leaves and seems to indicate they did practice like Beit Shammai. Otherwise, this whole story is not so meaningful. Because what was Rabbi Yochanan Achorani worried about? What was Rabbi Tzadok boasting about the fact that he kept like Beit Hillel if nobody practiced like Beit Shammai? From here, it sounds like they did practice like Beit Shammai. Tashma, shalu et Rabbi Yoshua, tzarat abat mahu. What is the story with a co-wife to an erva? Amar lehem, machloket Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel. So it's a machloket, Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel, it's our Mishnah. V'alocha kidivrei mi. Who does the halacha follow? Amar lehem, mipnei ma'atem machnisim roshi ben shnei harim gidolim. Why are you making me stick my head between two great mountains? Ben shnei machlokot gidolot. Giant machloket over here. Ben Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel. Between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, you ask me to paskin like whichever one, whether it's Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel. Mitjeri ani shemi yarutzu gul galati. I'm afraid that they will puncture my skull, meaning that I will be punished for taking the position, either like Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, because the other party will be upset that I paskin like them. And I'm not willing to take a position here. אבל אני מעיד לכם, but I would tell you what happened. השתי משפחות גדולות שהיו בירושלים, there were two large families in Yerushalayim. משפחת בית צבועין, מבן אחמאי, ומשפחת בית קופאי, מבן מקושש. So these two families, שהם בני צרות. They are children of צרות. ומהם כהנים גדולים, and from amongst them, there were כהנים גדולים, וימשו על גבי מזבח, and they were משמש in the מקדש without any problem. So I אמרת בשלמה עשו, if they practice like בית שמאי, הנו דקמר מתיירי אני. Then we understand why Rabbi Yeshua is afraid to paskin like Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, because there were those that were practicing like Beit Shammai and those that were practicing like Beit Hillel. And he didn't want to stick his head in there and paskin. But if everybody practiced, Eli Amar, Lo Asu, everybody practiced like Beit Hillel, nobody like Beit Shammai, Amai Kamar Mijariani. Why is he, what is he afraid of doing over here? Paskin like Beit Hillel, everybody's practicing like Beit Hillel. What's his fear? No, he nami dasu, mai mit yareani. Somebody says, no, okay, wait a minute. Even if they did practice like Beit Shammai, what is he afraid of over here? Ha Amar Rabbi Yeshua, im mamzer ele mechaivei mitot beitin. Why was he afraid of anything over here? He only thinks that you can create a mamzer through someone who's married to mitat beitin. Not from karet, not from a chiyuv lav. So over here, for him, whether it was Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, there was no mamzer produced out of this. Because even according to Beit Hillel's position that the tzarat erva went out, you only have an isur lav for Beit Shammai. Even according to Beit Shammai's position, where they allow the Tzarat Erva to marry the Yabam, it's only a Chiyuv Karet. Chiyuv Karet doesn't produce a Mamzer. So then what are you worried about? Where it says, Nei Nami de Mamzer Lohavi Pogom Yahavi. He agrees, there's no Mamzer here, but you still end up with a child who is problematic for the Kihuna. Whether now, according to Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, you still end up with a problematic child. Mikal V'chomer Mi'almana. You learn this out of a Kal V'chomer from Almana, which we'll do in 1 second. So over here you have evidence of the fact that there were tzarot habat that were chayvei lavim ninhu. They were bnei tzarot of Beit Hillel. They were chayvei lavim ninhu. These families, paskin like Beit Hillel, and they allowed their daughters who were co-wives to an erva to go out and marry a third party without chalitza. They married third parties without chalitza. According to Beit Shammai, there's a lav over there. So they allowed them to marry out to those families without any chalitza, which means that they were practicing like Beit Hillel. And those families married off to the Kohanim Gedolim without any problem. So nobody considered that to be pogum nekuhuna. So you see that the practice was like Beit Hillel. But obviously, Yeshua was afraid to say anything because of the side of Beit Shammai. But that means that they were acting on Beit Shammai. They were practicing like Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. It just gives evidence of the fact that there were families who were marrying into the Kohanim Gedolim practicing like Beit Hillel. So it's pretty clear that the halacha was following Beit Hillel and not Beit Shammai. All right, so now Gemara says, we learned out of a kal v'chomer mi'almana. Ma'almana she'en yisura noeg b'chol bina pagum. Almana is not a problem to everybody. It's only a problem, and almana may not marry a kohen gadol. She may marry a kohen or anybody else. So even though an almana who does not have an yisura that's noeg b'chol bina pagum, nevertheless, if an almana marries a kohen gadol, her child is a problem for the kuna. He's a halal. So then he says, "Ma'almana shenusra noeg bakol." Almana only applies to kohen gadol, but not pagum. So nevertheless, her child is problematic for the kuna. Zush yisura shave bakol. Over here, tzarat bito, which applies to everybody. She's equally restricted to any third party, according to Beit Shammai, at least. Then for sure, kal v'chomer that their child product of that marriage would be problematic to the kuna. So kabau mine tzarot bikapashit le bnei tzarot. Wait a minute. They asked him about tzarot, and he's answering them about bnei tzarot. Question that was posed to Rabbi Yeshua was tzarat bito, the co-wife of an erva. What is the halacha with regards to a co-wife of an erva? So that was the question they posed. It's like Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. The answer he gave them is, I don't know, but I know about these families in Yerushalayim. Now, the families in Yerushalayim were not a question about the tzara herself, but about the child, the product of that marriage. The question is the product of that marriage. So he's answering them about bnei tzarot, but not about the tzarot themselves. Where it says, tarte bayimine. They asked them two questions. Tzarot mai? Vim tim tzalo tzarot ke beit hilel? Bnei tzarot ke beit hilel beit shemai mahu? So it was a dual question, a dual-leveled question, which is, number one, tzarot ha'erva is alach lai beit hilel beit shemai. And if you pass them like beit hilel, what is the status of the child from a marriage of a tzarat bito that goes free without anything, and then marries a third party, what is the status of those children according to Beit Shammai? So Gemara says, the mai nafkamino, what's the difference? The mifshat vlad machzir gushoto le Beit Hillel. The answer is to answer the question of a child that is born out of a marriage of machzir gushoto. In the case of gushoto, man divorces his wife, she gets married to a third party, after she either divorces or is widowed from that third party, she goes back and marries her original husband. Then they have a child. What is the status of that child? Is that child pasul de kuhuna or not pasul de kuhuna? We had this again earlier. There the Gemara says, toevahi. So the Gemara there had two options about how to darshan it. It's toevahi velo b'na toeva. She is a toeva, but her child is not a toeva. Or, he toeva v'in sarata toeva. But her co-wife is not a toeva. So there's a possibility, which one is it? So the Gemara says, let us from here answer that question. Mi karmin in kavachomer. Do we say kavachomer? Ma'oman ala kohen gadol shein isura shaveh bakol. That over there, where there's not an isur that's by everyone, only by the kohen gadol, nevertheless, b'na pagum, zush isura shaveh bakol. Over here, makzir gushato, is a isur for anybody. There's an applies to everybody. And udin shi b'na pagum, certainly your child should be pagum. Odilma ikal mifrach. Mala amana she atzma mitchalelet. By almana, where she herself can become problematic. Now, by the almana, she otherwise would have been a kasher woman to marry into the kuhuna. A widow is not psula to enter into the kuhuna. Now she goes ahead and marries a kohen gadol, which is restricted. Why does she produce a chalal? Because she herself now becomes a chalala. The fact that she married a kohen gadol, which is an illegal marriage, ruins her, the kuhuna, from now on. So since now she's ruined for the kuhuna, her child that is born from that marriage will also be ruined from the kuhuna. On the end, by makzir grushato, the grusha was already problematic for the kuhuna by the fact that she was a grusha. A divorcee, by definition, is problematic. She cannot only marry a kohen gadol, she can't marry a kohen, she can't marry anything to do with the kuhuna. So therefore now, when she gets married to her original husband and does something wrong, was he mitchalelota? Did he change her status vis-a-vis the kuhuna? No! Her status for this is the kuhuna was always that way. She was problematic before and she's still problematic. So maybe over there, the child isn't affected because she is not affected. She was already problematic and therefore her status didn't change. The child's status would not change. So that would undermine the kal v'chomer. So that Gemara rejects this as being a proof or a way to understand what should be the outcome by b'nei makzir grushato. But the Gemara still has this idea that there's a dual-level question that was asked to Rabbi Yoshua. So then he answered, Amar Lahu, he said to him, Tzarot mitirei ani. The guy said, Tzarot, I am too scared to paskin, whether the halacha is like Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai. B'nei Tzarot, ani ma'id lechem. But the guy said, B'nei Tzarot, I'll give you the answer, and that is that he brought them the cases by these families that were marrying off their daughters that were co-wives to a Tzarat Erva. They were marrying off two people who were at Yichus. Their children were marrying off the daughters of that product of that marriage was marrying the Kohanim Gedolim. And therefore, even though they were practicing like Beit Hillel, they were not saying that they were problematic the Kuna according to Beit Shammai because they were marrying the Kohen Gadol. They are not Pegumim the Kuna Gedol, at least based on the evidence that he had from these families that were acting in this manner. Tashma b'mei Rabbi Dosu ben Orkinos. Hutra tzarata bat achim. They were matir tzarata bat to the brothers. Shmamina asu shmamina. The fact that in the time of Rabbi Dosa ben Arkinus, they were hutra means that achiv shor Rabbi Dosa sheyami tamidei Beit Shammai, the brother of Rabbi Dosa who was one of the tamidei Beit Shammai, he tira kedetani the command vasu apiv v'nal gukein. They were matir it and they acted upon this. So you see there that it's clear that they are acting in the position of Beit Shammai, because here you have a case of Tzarat Bito, and they were Matir, Tzarat Bito, to perform Yibum. And if that's the case, they were still acting according, he was a Talmud of Beit Shammai, and they were acting according to this Psak Halacha of Beit Shammai. And clearly here, we clearly have evidence that there were practices of Beit Shammai, even in the face of Beit Hillel. Now again, the Gemara gave two possibilities as to when it transpired. Was it prior to the Bat Kol or after the Bat Kol? And then in addition to that, then we had Abaye and Rova's explanation as to why this is not a problem of a lo tidgodudu. According to Abaye, it's not lo tidgodudu because it was in two different cities. Rova challenged it and said, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were not separated by cities, they were intermingled. If that's the case, how do they have the possibility of no luchit goru here? Rava says that the only problem is when a single Beit Din has a split psak. Is that a problem, luchit goru do? But separate batei dinim can have separate psiskei halacha, and that's not a problem of lo tit goru do. Okay, we'll stop here. 3 lines down on Tetzayin Amud Aleph.